The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I thought I'd say a few words about, during the holiday season, especially about relationship, about relating and bringing the practice to bear in how we relate to each other. In a real important sense, we are relational beings. We, you know, the kind of beginnings of our human life, like our existence, our survival, depends entirely on the care of another. And we really grow up in as relational beings. And in our Dharma practice, in our meditation practice, our interpersonal dealings, I would say, are sort of where the rubber meets the road, in the sense that this is the integration of the insights from the meditation seat are brought to bear in our relationships. And we can look in ways to our relationships and how we're caring for each other as ways to see how our meditative insight has been integrated in our lives. There's much to learn about how we can relate to each other on the meditation cushion, but it takes time. It's a gradual process to integrate the insights into how we deal with one another. And it can be kind of... we can get carried away with the meaning of meditative experiences or realizations on the cushion, but ultimately our insights need to take life in the form of relationship, need to be brought to bear to lead to more kind of harmonious ways of being together. So just to say a few words, a big subject, but a few words about how we bring the practice to bear on relationship. One very simple, direct aspect of this are the teachings on wise speech, on how we cultivate wisdom in the realm of speech. One of the senior teachers in this tradition, Joseph Goldstein, says he makes that actually a centerpiece of practice. And it seems sort of mundane, like, wise speech, maybe. But so much of our goodness and so much of what is unhealed expresses itself through our speech, that it's a very powerful place for practice. And the simple guidelines are, they get boiled down in different ways, but I appreciate speech that is true, kind, and timely. True, kind, and timely. And if our speech meets all three of those criteria, likely to be wise, helpful. I have a one friend who I've done a teaching colleague who I've known him for years now, and this is rare. It's certainly not the case for me, but I don't think I've ever heard him talk trash about anybody in all the years. It's not that he's like agrees with everybody or is, you know, avoids difficult conversations or anything like that. He's been discerning, but I don't think I've ever heard him say, do any of the kind of backbiting. And what that's engendered in the relationship, in my friendship with him, is a sense of real trust. You know, there's just a real sense of trust in that. This is a kind of one of the gifts of being careful with our speech. Now, as we speak, we can become more and more sensitive to the kind of karmic loop, you know, that over time, as the mindfulness matures, we feel more and more in tune with how our speech aligns or is misaligned with our deepest intentions. And when we're out of alignment, it's like the feedback loop becomes clearer and clearer over time. You know, sometimes I'll say something and it's that does not meet all three criteria: true, kind, timely. Something's off in my speech. And there's like an instant karmic feedback to it. I just know that something's not aligned. And then at that point, we have to decide whether we sort of like go back or whether we just learn from that experience. But over time, this feedback mechanism becomes clearer and clearer. Listening is a great gift and skill to offer people. I've done, you know, some therapy, provided therapy, and sometimes the clients, they don't even know why they feel better, and I may not know exactly why they feel better, but there's something that happens in being deeply heard in a way. To actually listen to the words of another in the same way that we listen to our own minds and bodies here on the cushions. This is a very kind of generous offering. Allows people to really settle when they're being heard in that way. And we can learn to listen sort of with the whole body. It's like we learn to listen with the whole body in the sense that we become more and more attuned to the impact of what we're hearing on our body. And I think this is sort of where intuition comes from, is that we're more and more receptive to what is being shared, to what's being said, and body language and tone, and we actually begin to become more. We become, the possibility of a deeper empathy is opened because we're receiving more data from people. We're listening in this deep way. We listen to ourselves in that deep way here. We learn to listen to others in that deep way in our lives. The Buddhist teachings often come back to this phrase of something like, nothing whatsoever should be clung to as I or mine. That's sometimes used as a summary of the whole of the teachings, that we've become confused about what we possess, who we are, what we can own, what's governable. And the practice is actually seeing through relinquishing this illusory ownership over experience. Now, I raise this because where we're identified, where we take ourselves too personally, where we have rigid, fixed notions of who we are. At these places where these identifications impair our capacity to love. They impair our capacity to really be with other people, because we've become brittle through our own rigid self-definition. And perhaps it's a little bit like we're carrying around this very precious or very expensive vase, and it's big and heavy. And you could imagine if you had to carry around a vase like that all the time, we would be a little bit braced against somebody maybe bumping into us, or somebody stealing it, or, you know, if we're trying to deliver that vase to some destination, we certainly would miss a lot of what's going on alongside us. We might miss the trees or the sun. And in the same way, when we cling to a sense of self, we become rigid. There's a kind of contraction of that, where our agenda is actually to protect that sense of self, to protect that vase. And people are only met in a way from that the view of self-protection. So another way of putting it is that Dharma practice makes us less and less offendable. Not to say we condone everything by any stretch, but there are fewer and fewer pressure points in us, fewer and fewer ideas about ourselves that we're willing to fight for. It's like we hold very loosely the sense of who we are, that self-definition, we hold that very loosely. And when we do that, when we're not attached to views of self, we actually can open and receive others more fully. We're not exerting a kind of our own ego pressure on another. We can allow them to fully be, to have their experience without the kind of subtle agenda of protecting the vase. So this is the way Shuang Tzu puts it. If a man's crossing a river and an empty boat collides with his own skiff, even though he be a bad-tempered man, he will not become very angry. But if he sees a man in the boat, he will shout at him to steer clear. If the shout's not heard, he'll shout again and yet again and begin cursing. And all because there's somebody in the boat. Yet if the boat were empty, he would not be shouting and not be angry. If you can empty your own boat crossing the river of the world, no one will oppose you, no one will seek to harm you. So some themes to reflect on in our relationships with others during this holiday time. And as always with these teachings, pick up whatever is of useful, whatever is of use, and investigate, and leave behind all the rest.